This is my instant reaction to Spider-Man No Way Home. I am so fresh out the theater, I've still got popcorn in my bag. This is take two, because in the first take, I then popped some popcorn in my mouth to be cool and get a nice sound effect. I choked on it. So, I don't want to choke on my popcorn again, so I'm just going to put this at least 6 feet away from me. Okay, this one's a tough one to talk about because I don't know what people have seen and what people have not seen as far as trailers and stuff go. So I'm going to hedge and be very, very careful and just say this. Depending on the trailers that you have seen, I'm just talking about theatrically released trailers that companies put out for their movies. Trailers have become condensed Trailers have become a condensed, abridged version of the movie. Now, sometimes they play around with your expectations a little bit to keep things secret. Sometimes you feel like there's a little bit of sleight of hand that goes on, especially with some of these Marvel movies. But more or less, we now live in an age where if you see a trailer, you know, a 2 minute, 3 minute trailer, you've seen the movie. You may not have seen the connective tissue, but you've seen all the highlights, right? They leave nothing to the imagination anymore, for better or for worse. So, I would say that that's a general pattern in Hollywood, and it mostly applies to this movie. If you have not seen a trailer and you have no idea what I'm talking about, then you shouldn't be listening to this. So, I'm going to consider everything past like minute five here, spoilers. We usually try to break it in half, but there's just no way to do it, okay? So, when the movie came out, it's still like pretty much brand new, but everybody was on my timeline at Binge Movies on Twitter, and all the timeline was all filled with people saying, you know, hey, everybody gets to see movies differently. Not everybody goes to like press screenings, et cetera, et cetera. Can you, don't spoil it. Don't post spoilers. And I didn't see a single spoiler for this movie in my timeline up until the point that I saw it, not one. And that's really great. I didn't mute any words. I didn't go through any extra hoops. But throughout the entire production and post-production and pandemic and delays and all of that, there were dribs and drabs of stuff that was coming out on the internet, and I was not looking for it. I was just on my regular timeline for the show at Binge Movies, and Twitter's got this little thing, you know, topics or whatever. And because I am a movie podcaster and I have a movie podcast, that's what we do here. I tweet about movies and stuff all the time. And I've done episodes about Marvel. And so all that goes into an algorithm. The algorithm goes, well, we need him to engage with this app more than he does. So we need to like show him stuff to get him to respond. That's what social media does. You're aware of this. So, but there's no filter for it. It's just anything. It's literally some random person. If it gets enough likes or retweets, the algorithm kicks it up to the surface and says, here, you like movies. So if somebody were to happen, for instance, to take a photo of certain scenes or this, that, or whatever, or say, oh, my cousin works at Marvel and here are the leaks and blah, blah, blah. And I was at a early screening and my friend, you know, and like all these sock puppet accounts, you know, they spoil stuff. So the whole marketing campaign of this movie has been really weird because what did they intend to be known before the full trailers were revealed? What do they intend to keep secret? Like what was the plan here? Because it seems like they pretty much gave away the store. And my conspiracy theory was basically one of two things. Either they just want to make as much money as they possibly can before the end of 2021, meaning they need it in the next 2 weeks. They need, and that's usually what the case is, right? Is you want your first weekend to be your biggest weekend, And you'd really like your second weekend to be a good one too, because the way that it works financially is that's when the studio gets their biggest percentage of the money, and subsequent weeks after that, I think the share goes further and further to the actual theater, right? So the studio makes the bulk of their money, points in the back end, et cetera, et cetera. That's why weekend openings are so big, they're such a big deal. They don't mean anything to consumers, but they mean everything to shareholders and companies and fourth quarter bonuses. So that's really, there was only two options, right? Is they're showing you so much, and they're just constantly, I mean, it was at a point where they're like, here's the first minute and a half of the movie. I was like, what the hell? Like, just save something. And so if you've seen all of that and you're like, that movie looks really good, you're probably going to like this. If you saw all of that and were like, oh, I'm curious as to how that's all going to connect together, you might like the answers that are in this film. Like, then again, you may not. I, in general, liked it. I would recommend it. I think it's a worthy theatrical film, especially during the holidays. And especially, I mean, I saw this in a sold-out theater, and no less than 8 times did the entire theater roar. And when I say roar, I mean, in wrestling parlance, they popped. And it was for like some random shit that I was not expecting. And I was like, oh, this is what we like. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And there's some other stuff. I was like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one. That's nice. Ooh, that's nice. Yeah, okay. And so that makes the experience so much better, right? When you're seeing it with a theater that's really excited and really likes what they're seeing and is responding the way that you're supposed to, and that's just sort of dead-eyed staring at something or talking their phone, et cetera, that makes all the difference. I've been lucky that my last 3 theatrical experiences, 2 of them being Ghostbusters Afterlife and this one being Spider-Man, I've had some great audiences. And so it's really affected, I think, my enjoyment of these movies. And it's like, I don't know if it's because we've been going through hell for the last indefinite period of time. And these big franchise movies are getting butts back in seats. I think that's a feeling I have, is that people are turning up again, some of them for the first time, to theaters to see Ghostbusters or Spider-Man or whatever. And as far as audiences are concerned, these movies are delivering. And it's been a long time. I've sat through a lot of movies that are franchised or IP, that are superhero, that are reboots and soft sequels and whatever. And that's not the reaction that those movies get. It's like you just sit there and, you know, it's just like it's Pavlov's dog. People are responding, but it's not genuine. Genuine responses for this film. So I'm a little bit more muted in my response to it, just because for the last 18 months, I've been seeing a bunch of stuff that and the trailers. And that's the, what I guess, my final point here in the non-spoiler section, is that I feel like the trailers have spoiled more than any potential leaker ever could. And that it's just an odd choice. I wish movies would figure out a different way to do that. They probably won't, because, you know, they're doing it for a reason. And the reason is the numbers tell them that's what casual audiences want. So, end of the spoiler section. It's a recommend. Go to theaters, see it. If you like the trailer, if you've avoided trailers, I think it's worth the risk. I'd go sooner rather than later. Go as soon as you can, because I think just bad actors are going to be out there just trying to spoil the shit out of things. Do yourself a favor. Do not look at the comment section of any YouTube video until you've seen this movie. Even if it's not movie, podcast, Spider-Man, anything related, don't look at it. Trust me. That's how I found out about The Force Awakens and many other things. So just avoid all of that. So I would say strong recommend from me. I cannot go into any more detail without going into more detail. The last thing I'll say to you is, if you want these instant reactions even faster, even more instantaneous, even more instant, then you need to become a patron. We have all kind of different levels of patrons. I won't bore you with the details. Go to patreon.com/bingemovies, and patrons of all levels, I believe, will receive these instant reactions quick and early. So I'm excited about that. So go check that out. We appreciate the support. Okay. From this point forward, it is spoilers. Okay, that's it. You've been warned. That was your time to turn it off. No turning back now. Within the first 5 minutes of this movie, we get Daredevil. and what I would say is, like, that was the first huge reaction. Because I was like, okay, I'm the only person that gives a shit about this Daredevil anymore. And that's what it felt like. And I know that's, like, kind of not true because the internet and stuff. But the internet and the people on Twitter are not the same as the people in the general population. And I would say out of a sold-out theater, XD, huge theater, huge sound, huge screen, the vast majority of people were probably like 25 and under, maybe like 30 and under. And it just, I looked around at it when the lights came up at the end, I'm like, Marvel has just got an entire generation of people on lock. They have seen everything. Everything. Old stuff, new stuff, TV shows, any passing reference or meme, or anything that is in the background of this movie, people were oohing and aahing and shouting, and it was men, and it was women, and it was people of color, and it was, I'm like, this is, I know this sounds so stupid, but this is four quadrant, broad appeal, popular entertainment. This is it. There isn't really much beyond that, which is why it was so, like, and I think that audiences, general audiences, they may not be as hardcore about like production details and listening to a bunch of movie podcasts, and especially one that goes on for hours and hours. But I'm just coming to the realization, I think general audiences are way savvier than I ever anticipated. And about franchise stuff. Like the thing that still blows my mind to this day, it was last month when a bunch of people responded, a bunch of young girls responded to Janine Melnitz, as played by Annie Potts, as if she was Timothy Chalamet. Right? It was like they knew who Janine, And that's what they said out loud. I was like, what the hell? And it happened in repeated screenings where people were like, oh, Janine. And I'm like, okay, one, do you guys not watch trailers? Because she's in the trailer. And two, are we that big? Is there like a Janine Melnitz Young Girls Society I don't know about? But I don't think it's just specific to Janine or Annie Potts, as great as she is. I think just general audiences are way more savvy about stuff. They just are. And this is a movie that leans completely into that. And I think it's my general takeaway is it gets stronger as it goes. And some movies do that, right? Some movies start strong and they peter off. The best movies are usually pretty great consistently, right? Like that makes the most sense, right? The best movies are pretty good the whole time. But what I mean by that is, like, and I've talked about this before, but some movies peak too early. It's hard, right? It's hard to know when to push certain buttons and pull certain strings. And, you know, you go for an emotional scene, but the movie's got too much of the back end. And you're like, oh my God, like that needed to be in the second act or that thing. You know, there's like so many times you watch a movie and it's just the biggest issue with it is structural. And this movie is not without its structural flaws. I think the first act is okay to good. It's not bad, but it's okay to good. And it's like the first maybe 15 minutes is pretty clunky because this is a challenge for any movie. It doesn't matter what it is. Back to the Future 3 is a great example of this. When you begin a movie immediately where the last one left off, it is a challenge because it's like you're in this weird hangover effect where you're not really in a new movie, but this isn't the movie I've seen a bunch of times. So I don't know what this is, right? This isn't Back to the Future 2 because it's like, okay, we're back in Back to the Future 2. Then we hard cut and it's still supposed to be Back to the Future 2 timeline, but doesn't feel like it because everybody's kind of like a little older and it just is like everything's kind of not quite the same. And then we get into the Old West. And now Back to the Future 3's actually started because it's like a new story. It's like, you know, whatever. And that, this movie, and This movie has that exact same kind of a thing where it's like, this isn't really Far From Home, but it kind of is, but it kind of isn't, you know, when it begins. And then there's like a cut and it's like, okay, well, we're kind of in this weird limbo state for the first 15 minutes. And maybe it's a little bit longer than that, but from the point that Doc Ock shows up, from the point that Alfred Molina shows up, the movie gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. And the use of the villains in this movie, I think, was handled way better. I mean, I went into this with a lot of trepidation. And they do something. I'm still trying to avoid complete spoilers, but they do something with the villains and their relationship to Tom Holland's Peter Parker. I didn't completely see coming. I got the gist of what the movie was going to be from the trailers, right? The gist is this, that Parker and Strange, for a reason that has a better explanation in the movie than it does in the trailer, slightly, accidentally cracked the multiverse. And the spell that it was there was trying to cast was anybody who knows that Spider-Man and Peter Parker are the same person, because his identity has been revealed to the world, that they're going to wipe the minds. It's like a flashy thing, Men in Black style, the whole world. And Peter doesn't like the idea because obviously May and Ned and MJ will know. Like, they'll forget that he's Spider-Man. And then in there, and Strange will as well. So he'll lose all, like, happy everybody. So he's like, you know, oh, there's like five or six people that he wants to not lose in his life, which makes sense. And him doing this and kind of like realizing the implications of it and talking and just stammering as this Peter Parker does, fucks up the spell and it fractures the multiverse. And, but lo and behold, Strange stops it, or thinks he does, before it's completed. And it's like, and it's a, there's a funny little line there, so I won't completely ruin it, but he's like, whatever. It's like, okay, well, I was really close. Let's not do that again. And come to find out that there's like these little micro fractures in the multiverse, and he stopped a big problem, but there's a small problem. And what happens is it kind of reverse effects. Anybody from outside the 616, presuming this is 616, anyone outside of the MCU Spider-Man universe who knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man has entrance or accessibility into our world. And the first people that come over are the villains. And they all come over at the moment of their death or defeat at the hand of Spider-Man. And they all got access to grind with Spider-Man, obviously. They don't realize that they're dead because in their minds, they haven't died yet. They were taken just at the moment before they died. So they have no real recollection of dying. And so we get Otto Octavius before Peter reasons with him and he learns to control the arms. His right mind has not yet been restored. So he's not the heroic Octavius at the end of Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, who's like, no, you listen to me now. Like, they snatched him, or he got snatched, blipped basically, before that moment happened. So he's still red light, evil Dr. Octopus or whatever. And same goes for Green Goblin. Everybody, you've seen the trailers. They're all in it. And so that's a reasonable explanation. What the movie decides to do, though, is, you know, and I figured this was what the dilemma was going to be. Once Peter figures out that sending them back to their world will kill them, that's not a very Spider-Man thing to do. And so he's going to try to find a way to send them back to their world without them having to die, which means he has to make them or help them become not villains. And a part of this movie, it feels like there was a movie with, Michael Keaton and Christopher Lloyd and a few other people where they were psychiatric patients and they escaped into society. And they were trying to go to a ball game, I think, and they ran away from their doctor. Their doctor got bonked on the head. And they escape their doctor, and they're running around, and you know, whatever. And they're creating a mayhem and mischief in the world. And there was like parts of this movie that kind of felt like that, where it's like it's young Tom Holland with all of these like super villains, and they've struck a bargain of, hey, if we can like fix what went wrong with you and send you home not dead, basically, do you promise not to kill me? And they're all like, yeah. And the one who gets the most playtime, and some of this is pretty funny, but the one who gets kind of the most airtime is Willem Dafoe as Norman Osborn. And he plays two characters. He plays Norman Osborn seconds before he died. So that's the Norman who's like, oh man, you know, Peter, don't tell Harry, right? And then there's the goblin who's like, you failed again, Norman, you know, that kind of whole thing. And he's great. He's probably the best part of this movie. He disappears after a certain point, and I get why, but he really holds the movie together. I think him and Alfred Molina really, really hold this movie together throughout the end of the first act and all of the second act. I think it's like they're carrying this movie on their shoulders. And it's not to dismiss anybody else, but if they're not good in this, or if they're not giving it their all, or charming, or scary, or different, so then this whole concept is really kind of stupid. So the idea, though, of him having like this gang of him, this Spider-Man, and a gang of Spider-Man villains who are like, well, you're not Peter Parker, or you're not Spider-Man, like, you know, you're not the guy I was trying to kill, and whatever, right? The way it just works out is it's pretty charming and pretty funny. And I kind of wish the movie was more of that. Like, I kind of wish the movie was more of this is a bad idea for a movie, but this is just what I got the most pleasure out of. I kind of wish the movie was more of the villains and Peter Parker just kind of fucking around, like doing signs and shit together. That stuff I really liked. And I felt like we almost kind of rushed through that a little bit. And we rushed through a little bit to get to events that happen. So I'm not saying they're wrong. Eventually stuff has to happen in this movie. And if it's really it's from that point forward of Alfred Molina showing up, and they tease Goblin a little bit, and then his interaction with Sandman, and his battle with Electro, and really once he gets the whole lot of them back into the basement of the Sanctum, you know, whatever. I think is the movie really picks up, and the villains really carry it. They just do. All of them. You know, there's everybody gets something to do, and they all do a pretty good job of it. And then the movie just kind of goes from strength to strength from there on out. We get a very emotional scene where we had a Deadpool. I wanted to call it the Nedpool. We have a Deadpool on Twitter of who do you think's going to die in this? Because it's just like, well, it's the third movie. Somebody's going to die. So who's going to die in this? And our audience said May was going to die, and she does. And that's when she finally gives the, with great power comes great responsibility, basically right at that instant. And because it's May who convinces, like, Peter's like, look, I got to get these people back to their world. They're villains. It's not my job to save them. They got to go back to where they come from. Some of them are going to die. Some of them won't. If they die, they die. Like that's fate or whatever. Like that's, because he Strange basically tells him that, you know, it's these people's fate to die. I mean, if that is their fate, that's their fate. We've got to restore the multiverse. And we can't really think about what's going to happen to these supervillains. And by the way, he's 100% right. And Peter's like, no, I'm going to take this magic MacGuffin box and I'm going to run away with it. And you've already seen that in the trailers. And so there's like, not a lot of surprises there because all the stuff's in the trailers. It's just, you don't know how it fits together. But if you've seen the trailers as the movie unfurls, you're like, okay, well, that's where that scene goes. And this is where this scene goes. And I bet this is where that guy shows up. And you're going to be right if you've seen movies before. So, Goblin basically betrays them because the Goblin takes over again. The way that they do it in this movie is basically you have Norman, who is almost like schizophrenia or split personality, basically. It's a little bit of a retcon of Norman Osborn, just a little bit. And where it's like Norman's this really meek, weak, mild, oh, you know, what did I do, Peter? Kind of a guy. And then he flips over this other personality and he loses time and doesn't know where he is. And so Norman is like, I wants to help Peter, like, help me get home. I don't even know how I got here. You know, this I did something really stupid, and now there's this other side of me that takes over, and, you know, I don't even exist here. Oscorp doesn't exist here. Somebody else is living in my house, and my son doesn't exist, and I just want to go back, and I will help you do it. He memes a line where, you know, I happen to be a scientist myself or something, whatever the meme is, and I got a huge laugh, and him and Peter are working together, right? It's almost very kind of fatherly. He's almost like a nicer Tony Stark in a way. And I kind of wish we would have got more of that. But there's so much in this movie that it doesn't really have a lot of time to breathe. But I really would have liked, I feel like when the eventual turn happens, and you know it's going to happen, you know Green Goblin's going to take over again. When they go to cure Norman, Goblin has taken him over and basically creates havoc with some of these other some of the other villains, and the whole plan goes to shit, and May gets killed by a glider, and she gets thrown across the room because she gets hit by it, but I don't even think she realizes that she's hit by it because she's kind of in shock. And so her and Peter are walking for a while, and she's like, oh, I gotta sit down, I gotta catch my breath. And she just seems like, she's like, oh, I'm fine, I just got knocked in my ass, I'm fine. And then she just slips away. And I think the way they handled her death was excellent. I think her knowing she's dying and giving this speech, and we've seen that with Uncle Ben before. We don't need to see that again. Handling it in a slightly different way was fine. And really, from that point forward, what this movie then becomes is Peter's dealing with all this rage and all of this, I want to kill, you know, I was like Strange was right, like I should have just sent them back, I got May killed. And I'm going to kill, maybe we'll fix the rest of these guys. I don't really give a damn, but I'm going to find Goblin. I'm going to kill him. And MJ and Ned are like trying to help out. And lo and behold, through a long convoluted deal, they find a way of portaling. Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire into the movie. And that's it. If that's the one thing that's not in the trailers. But we all kind of knew it was going to happen. And it 100% happens. And it's good. It's fine. Again, if anything, some of that stuff could have breathed a little bit more. There's so much in this movie, from Matt Murdock showing up to, you know, I want to tell you something. When Andrew Garfield came through that portal, before, as soon as they revealed him down the street, the whole audience went, oh, like, it was, and some guy goes, no way. And then he comes through and he takes the mask off, and it just got this insane applause. This huge, like, it was insane. The visceral response to it. And Toby got another one as well. And really, you could have taken multiple parts of this movie and just made like incredible hour and a half, 2 hour movie out of it. And instead, you have a little bit of a hangover from Far From Home that kind of is good, but kind of like stumbles its way into like getting its own plot going. It's almost like disorienting at first, you know, because like everything's moving so quick and you're like, wait, am I like acclimatized to this world? Like, wait, like I remember what happened, but it wasn't moving at this speed. And I get why it's moving at that speed, because his whole identity has been revealed to the world and it's trying to make you feel that the frenzy of him trying to figure out what he's going to do. But when you open the movie like that and it's a continuation of something you've already seen, or a little bit of a retcon of the ending of the last movie, then it's kind of disorienting in a way, which isn't bad. Like sometimes a good cold open is disorienting on purpose, but it doesn't seem to serve much more of a purpose than that, because then immediately Matt Murdock shows up and goes, well, I'm a very good lawyer and all the charges have been dropped. And you're like, oh, okay. Like that didn't serve that much of a purpose. Like We needed to put him. We needed to put him in the a corner, but we needed there to be very little legal ramifications because we need him to be able to continue to act throughout the film. And that's exactly what happens, right? Is then we're on to this thing, and then the villains show up, and then Strange and the multiverse and the spell and the blah 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 blah. And then he gets all the villains, and then he betrays Strange, and then he's running around with this box, and then MJ's got the box, and he's trying to cure the villains, and they're in Happy Spin. And it's all good, I would say. Some of it's really good. It's just so quick. There's just so much that's happening that none of it really gets to breathe. And, you know, you could have done almost a whole movie. And I guess you've already done that with Into the Spider-Verse. And there's quite a bit of the other Spider-Men. And the way that they approach the whole thing is kind of glib, with a sense of humor, with a little bit of wink and of a nod, but not too much. It's not too heavy-handed. Everybody seemed to be game, showed up to play. Tobey Maguire looks old as fuck. That gets addressed. All the memes get referenced. All the stuff gets referenced. It gets very meta to a point. Up until the point where, like, they literally have Tobey Maguire Spider-Man say to Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, like, I don't know why you don't think you're any good. You're amazing, which is not only the title of the film, but there's always been this, like, well, what's the better Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire? Tobey Maguire, especially before Tom Holland, there was always like, this isn't my Spider-Man. And so to have, like, the old guy be like, nah, you're great. That got to the line of being like, Okay, all right, yeah. You know, here's the thing, though. I don't think anybody thought Andrew Garfield was the problem with those movies. He's pretty great in them. He's a pretty great Spider-Man. I think everybody's consensus was like, I don't necessarily like the writing, but I like the guy. The guy is good. The writing stinks. And that's what I would say, too, about him, from what I remember. The most egregious shit in this movie is a Lego Death Star and a close-up of a Lego Emperor Palpatine. We fucking get it. You own the rights to all of this. We fucking get it. And if you want to say that that's an Easter egg for Multiverse of Madness, which we'll get to in a second, or it's they're tipping their hand towards evil Doctor Strange from the What If series, who's now going to be brought into the movies, if that's what you want to say, then fan-fucking-tastic. That was a nice little nod. But you could have come up with a completely different way to do it. And that's my guess as to what they would say, because he gets the idea to go to Strange from looking at the male witch, the weird, which I've never seen in my life, Halloween decorations. And then there's just, at the end of the movie, like this like looming close-up of Palpatine shooting lasers out of his fingers. And that's pretty much what Dr. Strange looks like in the after credit scene. So that's my guess as to what it is. The biggest thing that this movie needed to not do was be Spider-Man 3. And that's really what the third act feels like. It feels like it's basically a cleanup job. It's almost a recreation of the set piece from Spider-Man 3. It's just way better done. Really a sort of a rehabilitation of the Amazing Spider-Man stuff. It's a way of saying to the fans, hey, if you've ever loved any of this, it all still exists. And these guys all love each other. So you all can love each other now. And you can all just accept all Spider-Man. There's even a line about Jamie Foxx has, which is a pretty good line. It's like, oh man, we were from Queens. You're always helping the poor. I thought you were black. And Andrew Garfield is like, oh, I'm sorry about that. And he's like, well, there's got to be a black Spider-Man somewhere out there. And that got a huge roar. I mean, that got almost as big of a response as Garfield coming through that portal. No shit. It got the same level of response as Matt Murdock on the fucking screen being a lawyer and doing some superhero shit for about 3 minutes. It's so nuts how popular Miles Morales has become. It's insane. Rightfully so. Oh God, what else is there to say? It's It's a good movie. It's not one of the best Spider-Man movies, but it's kind of a celebration of all things Spider-Man. This movie kind of really suffers from the fact that Into the Spider-Verse kind of beat it to the punch in a couple of different ways. We've already seen kind of like multi Spider-Men, right? So somebody was saying, instead of calling it Spider-Men, it should be Spider's Man. We've already seen multiple we've already seen the Spider's Mans. The Spider's Man, right? We've seen Spider-Gwen, and it's such a good movie. And we've seen Miles Morales, who does not appear in this. We've seen so much of that stuff. And that movie is so good and does the multiverse so well that it's like, this is good, but it's like, that's great. And it never reaches the same kind of a level. Because it's got to really do at least three things. It's got to conclude the Homecoming trilogy. And I guess I'll wrap it up with that. How successful do I think it is? It's three missions, really. Number one, it has to conclude the Homecoming trilogy. Number two, it's really doing some cleanup job, and not just nostalgia, but the best way to put it is it's like kind of cleaning up and cleaning house the Spider-Man brand. It's tying up loose ends from Amazing Spider-Man. It's kind of finishing some of that story off. It's kind of giving us a Sinister Six movie, but it's only five. Like, it's kind of like everything. Every time we got messy, we're kind of getting a Spider-Man 4 that we didn't really get with Sam Raimi. We're doing Sandman again, but, you know, multiple villains, but better. We're getting Green Goblin back, but he actually looks like Green Goblin. Like, that's another great little touch, is that it's a mixture of his old gear and his new gear, and it basically he just looks like comic book Green Goblin. So we get to kind of, Toby gets to sort of finish and wrap up his story because we never got Spider-Man 4 because they tried to reboot it. And then we got to clean up that story. And this movie kind of does that for these characters. And so that's really nice. And they all have great interplay with each other, which is really fun. And we've got to get this guy now in the conclusion of his own trilogy. We've got to get him to be Spider-Man. You know, not Iron Man Jr., not all this different tech, all these different suits. You almost got to start him at zero. And by the end of the movie, he's in the classic Spider-Man suit, which the way that they, no pun intended, weave that in, that was a stroke of fucking genius. That was like the best part. I was like, God damn. Because I love when shit's right there in front of you and you didn't see it. And as soon as they did, I was like, God damn it. So now, if there's going to be another trilogy, it could actually be kind of like a bona fide, he's going to be college age Peter Parker, who's into science, and who is in a shithole apartment, and he's had his Uncle Ben moment, and all he is Peter Parker, right? He's not an Avenger. Nobody remembers him. He's had to do the sacrifice play. He's that battered martyr with a guilt complex, you know, who's motivated by this impossible example that was set for him by May, instead of Ben in this instance. So that's pretty exciting. Well, that's the Homecoming plot line. I think it does a really good job of that, even though sometimes it feels like he takes a little bit of a backseat in his own movie. So that's really good. The cleaning up the franchise, I think it does as good of a job as it could possibly do without being like gratuitous and overly messy, right? Really good job there. And then the final thing is it's really pushing forward basically the multiverse concept and where Doctor Strange is going to go. And it really serves almost as a bridge from what we've seen in the first part so far of Phase 4 to what's coming next. And I would say that Phase 4, having been the weakest phase probably since the first part of Phase 1, I think with the combination of Loki, Hawkeye, parts of What If, and now this, I think we're finally gaining some steam. And the way that this movie ends, the guy beside me was the one who had the Doctor Strange trailer ended. He went, fair enough. He's like, I guess we're coming back to see another one. And because it's just like, oh shit, okay. Like, you thought a bunch of this stuff was like not really going to tie together. It does. And now you're starting to see like the cards drop and you're starting to see like, okay, all right, okay, they still know what they're doing. Because it's kind of meandered for a while. Like, what the fuck is any of this? And now again, you start to feel the threads of WandaVision and What If and Loki and Spider-Man and Hawkeye and all that shit starting to come together. And you're like, okay, we're building back up to something worthwhile finally. We had the come down. Now we're going to start peaking again. And, you know, it gets dicey from this point forward because what if it sucks, you know? What if we don't like where they're going to take us? But we're starting to climb the hill again, which is a way better feeling than just meandering around in weird, seemingly disconnected stories with varying quality of writing and acting. The first after credit or mid-credit scene, I guess, is Venom. And I am so glad that they did this. Because spoilers for Venom, Let There Be Carnage. But I was like, none of this makes any fucking sense. I mean, none of it. None of the movie makes sense. But the whole thing of like, he gets warped into the 616 MCU Spider-Man world. And he licks the screen and is like, ooh, I know him or whatever he says. And I'm like, what the fuck? No, he doesn't. How does he know him? And whatever, right? I don't fucking get it. Well, he gets teleported. The only way this makes any sense is that Venom's comment about how there's a hive mind between all the symbiotes that extends into the multiverse is that the Topher Grace Venom or some other Venom, probably multiple other Venoms, have met Spider-Man. And they have figured out that in their universes, Spider-Man is Peter Parker, right? So whatever multiverse where there's a Spider-Man and a Venom, those Venoms have figured out that Spider-Man is Peter Parker, right? That knowledge but this doesn't quite 100% make sense. Because what ends up happening is anybody in the multiverse who knows that Spider-Man's identity is Peter Parker comes into the 616 world or whatever. The MCU. And that's the whole, like, they're coming through and I can't stop them. That's the whole hubbub of that from the trailer. So cut to Venom at a bar in Mexico, drunk, ordering drinks and trying to figure out, like, getting caught up to speed about the Avengers and all this sort of stuff. And Venom is like, yes, Eddie, he's explained this to you a bunch of times. This is a world full of superheroes. What don't you get? He's like, but it doesn't make any sense. And it's a whole kind of a gag scene or whatever. So he goes to stand up and he's drunk and Venom's, and he's like, maybe we got to go to New York. Maybe we got to talk to this Peter, the Spider-Man or whatever. And you're like, okay, all right, that's got to be a setup for it. Nope. He immediately gets warped right back out of the MCU. And I thought, what the fuck was the point of that? Is that like, Sony's like, hey, Venom's a part of the MCU. And Marvel's like, sure he is. For this one scene, and now he's not. You know, I was like, what a fucking waste of time. But left behind is a little bit of the goo from the symbiote. Just a little black goo. My only guess is because they have a seemingly random bit of banter where Tobey Maguire is talking about the weirdest villain he's ever fought. Because Tom Holland's like, hey, guys, you know, who's the weirdest villain you ever fought? It's charming, but it kind of comes out of nowhere. And he's like, well, this one time I fought this alien, and he was made out of this black goo, and it got really weird or whatever. And that's my only guess, is that somehow the symbiote, the hive mind, but if that is true, then like any symbiote attached to any host anywhere in the multiverse would have showed up. And I guess it's, arguably that did happen, right? That did happen. We just didn't see it. But it's not like Topher Grace showed up, right? It's Eddie Brock, who in the Venom movies, correct me if I'm wrong, there is no Spider-Man in his world, and he doesn't know who Spider-Man is. He certainly doesn't know who, like, Spider-Man's Peter Parker. That's my impression of it. So I don't really get the whole why that particular Venom is the one who shows up in this movie. I understand the purpose it serves, which is we want the symbiote in our Marvel movies, but we don't want this particular Venom. there's like a goofy comedy rom-com anti-hero fart movie. We don't want that, but we want the symbiote. And that's like basically Marvel was like, yoink. Like, we'll take some of that. Thank you. And then it was like, all right, boom. And just like booted his ass back to Cartoonville. I think that's really funny. Like that really, I was like, you sons of bitches. Somehow they were like, all right, Sony. All right. Yeah, we'll play ball. And they just took the fucking symbiote. They took Venom and just kicked him the fuck out. So now you're going to get two different Venoms, which is really fucking messy. But that's what's going to happen. You're going to have cartoon anti-hero, you know, perverted justice or whatever his name is, Venom, from these really shitty movies from Sony. And you're going to have probably Black Suit Spider-Man. That's what I think they're going to do. I think that we've already planted the seeds with the Rage and all that sort of stuff. Maybe the most effective scene in the whole movie for me is a scene with absolutely no words whatsoever, which is when Holland Spider-Man picks up Goblin's glider and is going to stab him with it. Literally just like stab him through the head with it and kill him. And Tobey Maguire appears out of nowhere and catches the glider, and he just looks at him with those weird, big, Gollum-style eyes that he has. He just looks at him, and there's a, like this resonance of like, I know where you're coming from. Right? It's not a look of judgment. It's a look of empathy. And it's like so much, like props to Tobey Maguire. Because so much is communicated in that moment of like, I know you want to do this and you have every right to do this, but you are Spider-Man and Spider-Man can't do this. You can't do this. You have to be bigger than this now. You have to grow up. It's basically the look, right? And that's what this trilogy has all really been about, is this is like a proto Spider-Man, which it feels weird because it's all been all about like an origin story of how this particular kid becomes Spider-Man, this particular Peter Parker. But we've seen him in Civil War and Infinity War and Endgame. And like he said, all these grand adventures. And it's like, that feels really weird for like a little Spider-Man, you know, for Spider-Man Jr. And the way this movie ends with the black suit, which we know we're going to get Secret Wars. And all this sort of stuff. It's like, okay, now I think we're in with him in the more classic Spider-Man suit with the classic blue, which he takes from May's dress. It just has that feeling of, okay, we got it. We got you there. We got you back to what you wanted, you know? And you know what's really funny? Is people fucking screamed. Twice. I mean, just uproariously. When May dropped it, with great power comes great responsibility. People popped. Huge. Like clapped, cheered, whistled, the whole thing. The whole theater. Just. And then when he drops the line back and Toby finished it, people did it again. And it's almost what I felt was when the movie started to gain momentum is when the audience realized that this is like finally going to be a Spider-Man movie. Like this Tom Holland is finally going to be Spider-Man. You know what I mean? And the movie's a success for that. I liked Homecoming for what it was, because it was like it was enough of Spider-Man, but also very different, right? And that was really fun. And Far From Home was just kind of a mess to me. It was not bad, but it's just like, this movie's kind of a mess. And I've already covered it before, so I won't retread that. But, you know, it's like, you know, I wanted to be like Jeff Goldblum, like knocking and be like, now there is going to be Spider-Man in this Spider-Man movie. And this one is like, you want some Spider-Man, huh? What about all the Spider-Mans? The Spider's Man, but oh, Spider's Man, and all their references. You want Tobey Maguire to have a bad back because he fell in a dumpster? You got it. You want Doc Ock to end up being a good guy and join the heroes in the third act because he was a good guy in Spider-Man 2? You got it. Yeah. You want Andrew Garfield to redeem himself and catch MJ because he fucked up and couldn't catch Gwen Stacy? You got it. You want tears and forgiveness and acceptance and love? You want to see three Spider-Men? You want to see little Tom Holland look at the two Spider-Men that you grew up with and say, I'm here because of you and thank you so much, even though it doesn't make any sense in the movie? Yes, you got it. If you love Spider-Man, I think you'll like this movie. And I think we are finally, now if we just put a goddamn camera in this kid's hand, we'd be set. So, whoa, I've got almost an hour, but there's so much to talk about in this movie. That's, I guess, my only complaint is I think it has one too many masters to serve. But considering how many masters it does have to serve, and considering how much they gave away in the trailer, for me to still care and be invested and to be consistently between like a 7, like if excitement level, like enjoyment level, like of like 1 to 10 or 0 to 10, and 10 being like I'm having the time of my life. This movie like kept me in a range between like a 7.5 and like an 8.75. Like I never broke that barrier where I was like, yeah, which I love that feeling. I never got there because I'm like, well, obviously this movie's going to end. The only way to save the universe is that nobody can remember not just Spider-Man, but Peter Parker. They're going to Superman 2 the shit out of this. Like, I tweeted that after, I think, one of the trailers. I was like, they're going to Superman 2 the shit out of this. It's the only way that you can fix it is that you've got to, if you can't undo the events, then you have to get rid of the knowledge. You know, he has to kiss Lois Lane and she can never remember him. He has to take the noble path. That's what Superman and that's what Spider-Man, that's what heroes are supposed to do. And, of course, that's the path that he chooses. And so now he ends up alone with no MJ. We very clearly, this one is not MJ. So guess what, motherfuckers? You could get another MJ if they can't sign Zendaya back, which I like her. I hope they continue with her. But, you know, they're going to move forward with no Ned, no MJ. This guy's fucking alone. He's got the classic Spider-Man suit, rather. And he's starting from the bottom. There's no May. There's no Happy. There's no Stark Tech. There's nothing. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Exciting times. So I think we might actually get a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And they're going to go off to MIT, and he's going to stay in New York. So pretty, it's interesting. We'll see what happens. You could actually make some like good old-fashioned Spider-Man movies with this and don't put him in space anymore for a little while. But then again, there's Secret Wars, so what the fuck do I know? Just get Madam Web. Let's fucking go. Beyonder, Madam Web, the Watchers, the Observer. Let's get it all. Galactus, let's fucking go. Silver Surfer, this shit. Jack Kirby, this stuff. Let's all do acid and get fucked up and watch Marvel shit for the rest of our goddamn lives. And the thing is, they put out something mediocre, and I'm exhausted by Marvel. They put out something gets entertaining, and I'm like, give me some more of this shit. So that's all you gotta do. All Marvel has to do is make every man, woman, and child of every creed, color, race, ethnicity, gender identity, extraordinarily happy. Every time. Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. This is a 100% recommend. I'm done. What did you think of Spider-Man No Way Home? Did you like it? Also, the movie's called No Way Home. So a lot of different meanings to that, but can't go home again. So did you like it? What did you think about it? Anything I missed? Can you please explain to me why Eddie Brock showed up, the Tom Hardy Eddie Brock and not somebody else? I get that he's the current Venom, but that doesn't make any sense to me. Can you please explain that? And can anybody explain to me how fucking Morbius, which looks like a like Ghost Rider, is it going to fit into this at all? And fuck, let's do a multiverse Blade. Get Wesley Snipes back. He's great. Be like, I'm Blade. I'm Blade too. Yep. Put Triple H back in these movies. What the fuck are we doing? What's her name? Not Piper Perabo. You know who I'm thinking about. The one with the dog that was like Triple H's girlfriend in Blade Trinity. You know exactly who I'm talking about. Screaming at your phone or your television or your car. What was that? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. But just keep screaming it very loudly, her name, over and over again, especially if you're in traffic. Yeah, I still can't hear you. Just, you're going to have to scream real loud. Roll down your window, just start screaming her name at the top of your lungs, and maybe my binge movie sense will start to tingle. All right, until next time, thank you very much for listening to me ramble. These are my unconstructed thoughts, my instant reaction, available first to patrons, then to the rest of the world. Until next time, binge on.